You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011. This is episode 195, Tablets in Ministry. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. We're quickly gaining on episode number 200. We're at 195, Sally. Good morning.
Good morning, Martin. Nice to talk to you this morning. Post-Synod Convention, this will be airing. And so we're actually recording early and looking at Synod Convention just right down the road from us. And it's always an interesting time for the church.
It is. There's a lot of activity definitely around here, and I'll be there all week. And interesting conversations. I don't know that there's anything hugely controversial this year. A few things, but... looking forward to conversations about the new NIV translation and a couple other things. And it's always good to get that many people, like-minded people together who are really interested in the work of the church. And so it's good. Be good. And it's close this year, for me at least. I'm just down the road, about 45 minutes away in a water town.
So we'll be curious to hear your stories of how many Wells Techers you run into.
Yeah, I know there's at least a few. Perry Lund will be there. He's a frequent contributor, and I know there's at least a few others.
Looking forward to hearing all about it.
Well, we have a special show today, a little bit out of character for our Wells Hacker series, where you and I both trade off blog posts, and we chit-chat a little bit about those posts. We have an interview this week, and it is with Pastor Guy Marquardt from Lodi in California, and we thought that it would be nice to have him on to talk about his iPad experience earlier on in this, you know, I don't know when it was, maybe 2 months ago? No, not even 2 months ago, month and a half ago. You went on a vacation with your iPad in tow and wrote about it and your experiences about kind of an iPad-only experience on vacation. Well, Pastor Guy Marquardt actually went to Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary summer quarter just with his iPad for note-taking and report writing, and thought it would be great to talk to him about his experiences. And so why don't we play that right away, then we can jump into our post, because they do kind of tie in with the whole iPad theme today. So let's listen to our conversation with Pastor Guy Marquardt. We're pleased today to have Pastor Guy Marquardt from Lodi, California. Good morning, Guy. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Martin.
And I forget the name of your church there in Lodi. Please help me.
I'm serving Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church.
Christ in Lodi. And you have been there, what, a couple years now?
A little over 2 years.
Okay. And you, former missionary to Brazil, I want to say.
Correct. I served in Brazil as a missionary for 14 years before that.
Okay. And now you're in beautiful Lodi, California. And the reason that we wanted to talk with you is that you recently had an experience going to Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary's summer quarter, not so much the classes themselves, but how you approached working within them and the tools that you took with you. And you've got a blog now that you've started called iPadinMinistry.wordpress.com. And maybe you can give us a little bit of the background of what led you to kind of go the route of an iPad-only experience there as you went to Mequon this summer.
Well, I was one of those that decided to get one of those iPads the very first moment I could a year ago.
Did you stand in line?
No, I actually pre-ordered.
Ah, okay. One of the smart ones.
It was on my doorstep the very first day.
Okay.
And it was like Christmas. I guess it was closer to Easter, but
right.
It felt like Christmas. And definitely, I've very much enjoyed the tablet for a lot of different uses. And I always had to make sure that my wife understood that it was money well spent.
For professional purposes,
to play
yes.
with. Right.
Right.
So I've been using it a lot in my ministry and in many different ways. And I've found that it has replaced my laptop in a lot of ways that I normally would have hauled around my laptop. Now I can get away with just the very light iPad.
Uh-huh.
And I decided to also see if I could get away with that at Summer Quarter.
Okay. Maybe before we get to your experience at Summer Quarter and how it fared for you, what kinds of ministry uses, how have you been able to utilize it in your day-to-day ministry?
Well, I use it, for example, whenever we have meetings of any sort, rather than taking the laptop for writing notes or for checking calendars or looking up any other sort of files I might have. Mm-hmm. I have all of that on my iPad.
Okay.
And it's a lot easier to take to the meeting. Plus, you don't have that big lid of a laptop,
right,
which is sticking up between you and the other people.
Mm-hmm.
I also take it sometimes on visits, that is to say whether evangelism visits or things like that, where I can show off pictures of our church or a short PowerPoint. I've got, for example, God's Great Exchange on there.
Oh, neat.
And, some other things, media uses. Mm-hmm. I use it for PowerPoints for my catechism class and other Bible classes.
Okay. Now, do you have the first version or the iPad 2?
I have the iPad 1, yeah,
okay.
The original.
All right. So let's talk a little bit then about what happened at Summer Quarter. You were there for 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, I was there for 2 weeks. Now they have the option of going for just 2 weeks. In the past, it was always three, and it's harder to get away for the full 3 weeks. But, yeah, 2 weeks of classes. I had the full load, everything I could take for those 2 weeks, and I used my iPad in the classroom and then also outside as I did my homework. Mm-hmm. In the classroom, of course, for taking notes, for writing down observations. Also, sometimes the professor would say something that piqued my curiosity, and so I would either go to Wikipedia or something like that on the internet to do some further research.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, outside of classroom, for reading. A lot of essays and other materials
right.
were assigned for reading, and also for preparation of papers. I did a presentation for a classroom presentation that I prepared on the iPad's version of PowerPoint.
Uh-huh. Keynote.
And
right.
And then also for communication uh-huh. with my family and with my church back home.
Okay. Now, did you? What did you use to take notes with? Did you use the virtual keyboard, or did you have a physical keyboard?
Both. When I knew I was going to be taking a lot of notes and typing longer, then I used the keyboard dock that
okay.
Apple sells, and that sets it up nicely. It actually, at that point, almost turns into a
netbook,
a laptop in, uh-huh. in a way. But it's a lot easier for taking a lot of notes.
Right.
If I just wanted to jot something down, then the virtual keyboard for me works just fine.
Sure. And did you take notes into Pages or some other application?
When it was for classroom notes, mostly into Pages. That way I knew I could take it and add any sort of other formatting that I uh-huh. wanted. If it were just for myself, then I would take it either into Notes or something else, a different program.
Okay. So what other things worked well for you before we get to some of maybe the limitations?
Well, obviously the biggest thing was portability.
Sure.
It just was very easy to be able to go to class and just grab that very light iPad and set it up or take it down very easily, whereas you know, the other students, of course, as soon as you get there, you have to look for an outlet to
power?
Plug it in.
Yes.
Power, that's right. Whereas the iPad goes for a good 10 hours mm-hmm. without having to be charged. And so I didn't have to worry about sitting next to an outlet. It was very easy to pass it around, for example. If I had pulled up something or had written something and I wanted to share it with another student or with a professor, it was very easy to just hand it across the table or across the aisle. Those were the things that were definitely better on the iPad than with a laptop. Mm-hmm. The other things that you can do just as well, whether it was the taking of the notes or the class presentation I did, it was very easy to just plug the cable right into the iPad, and it was connected to the projector, and away we went. I could get to the internet just as easily as anyone else with a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, for the most part, it worked very well.
So what were some of the areas that maybe weren't as easy as you maybe would have liked if you had had a laptop along with? By the way, did you take a laptop as a backup, or did you just go, cold turkey?
Well, I jumped off the cliff here, and I went without the laptop.
Okay.
I was trusting in the iPad. I wanted to make sure that I didn't fall back
no
on
temptations.
The laptop. Just to make sure, exactly right. I wanted to make sure that I did everything that I could with the iPad, just to make sure that it did work. And there was a couple of things that were either awkward or just not possible. And most of them, actually, I didn't have to do, so I was able to work around them. For example, if I had to print, I didn't have to, in the end, print anything up, but it would have been very difficult if I had needed to.
Yep.
The other thing was I didn't take any exegesis classes, that is to say, like translating from the Greek and the Hebrew. And there the limitations of the Logos program on the iPad are really strong.
Or you can't enter Hebrew or Greek letters.
Right. I'm not sure if I can enter them or not, but I can't pull up the full Logos features.
Right.
For studying the text.
Yeah, it's pretty stripped down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other limit I had at the seminary was they have a lot of files on their common drive. Professors put class notes and their PowerPoint presentations, and sometimes require the students to upload their activities to that common drive, and the iPad has no access to that sort of file system. So what I needed to do then was work around by going to one of the library computers, taking along a thumb drive and loading it up that way. It was awkward. I could work around it, but it wasn't nearly as easy as it would have been with a laptop.
How did you get the files from the iPad to a thumb drive even?
Well, actually, now that I think about it, it wasn't a thumb drive. It was Dropbox.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
On the library computer, I could access then, how did I do it? I guess I went through my email. I Dropboxed the file to my email, and then I accessed my email from the library computer.
Right.
And was able to go at it that way.
Right. Sally, you had a kind of a similar experience, although not in an academic sense, by going on vacation with just the iPad. Did you find that it basically did what you needed it to do or what you expected it to do?
I was really pleased with the results. I didn't do a lot of writing, and I don't have an external keyboard, so I relied solely on the
virtual keyboard,
right? But I actually got pretty good at it. It wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. A lot of my experience was centered around media because I have the iPad 2. I was real into the camera and video camera functionalities, and I was thrilled with having it as an all-in-one device for that.
Sure.
But definitely happy with the size and the lightweight nature of the iPad in comparison
portability is big,
a big bag along on the vacation that was tightly packed as it was. So.
I found that I certainly can't type as fast on the virtual keyboard, but I'm a touch typist, so that is somewhat frustrating for me, is not knowing exactly where my fingers are because I don't have the home keys that I can always return back to. I think that I've seen some people really burn through that virtual keyboard because they're more hunt and peckers, and that's the keyboard's a little bit tighter and very responsive, and the whole the correcting function that is on the iPad I think is really well done. I don't know if you guys have found that
as well. That makes all the difference, yeah. Martin, I think if it weren't for that correcting function, the typing wouldn't be nearly as good as it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not a touch typist, but I do okay. But the iPad does a great job of anticipating what I'm trying
just
to
just get
type,
close, and it'll do the rest, yeah.
It makes all the difference.
Yep, absolutely. So as you're now kind of got that in your rear view mirror, guy, do you envision continued usage of it, expanded usage? Have you thought of other ways to use it in ministry circumstances?
Yeah, I guess where I'm at is I'm still just exploring what can be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it almost now, some people will ask, why do you need an iPad when you already have a laptop?
Right.
And it reminds me of the question I remember when I was a teenager. The question was, why do you need a microwave oven when you already have an oven and a stove? And now everybody has both.
Right.
You don't see a kitchen without both of them. And it's because over time, people finally saw that there were many uses for the microwave oven that just fit that niche use, and I think the iPad is like that. It's not that it takes the place of the laptop, but it also adds some other functionality that it can do better than, and it increases the things that you can do, whether it's with productivity, whether it's reading and research, communication, or data collection, or the media uses. I'm still just exploring it, and that's why I put together the blog that I did, trying to explore with other people as well how to justify this expense,
right.
This neat toy that we have, and making sure that it's actually being put to use in a way that helps our ministry.
Right. Now, I'm looking on your blog now, which again is iPadinMinistry.wordpress.com, and your latest post from July 8th. Looks like you have a mind map on there. Is that something that you created on the iPad or elsewhere?
Yeah, that was on the iPad itself.
Okay. What tool does that?
I'm trying to remember which one I used. I have a couple that I've been trying out. There's one called MindNode,
okay,
and another one called iThoughts HD.
Because that seems like a great use for it, especially in, you know, brainstorming sessions or in meeting, you know, taking meeting thoughts and ideas and organizing things. So
exactly,
great because application.
Either you can have it plugged into the projector and everybody looking at it, or if you don't have that available, you just simply pass the iPad across the table to the other person to look at.
So with just one final question here on the use of the projector with it. Now the iPad 1 or the original iPad, you get a converter dongle that hooks into a VGA cable, is that right?
Yes, it doesn't come with the iPad. It's
okay.
A separate expense.
And does it show exactly what's on your screen then?
Depending on the
It's application specific, isn't it? Okay.
Yes.
And Sally, for you, the iPad 2, I believe, and I don't have an iPad 2, I think it will do screen mirroring. That's one of the features, the newer features.
Right. I actually bought a cable that'll hook it into the RCA jack so you can see it on a television.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have a couple of different flavors of their cables. So.
Oh, yeah. I think that those they're not really inexpensive. They're actually expensive cables for what they are. But there's a cable for everything at this point.
Right.
They're
Pastor Marquardt has a blog post that says, don't forget the additional expenses.
Of cable, right.
Does come along with those.
Yeah, and they are expensive, but they also greatly expand the use of the tablet itself.
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't have been able to do what you did, you know, at Summer Quarter without them. So.
Right.
Very good. I appreciate the time that you took with us, and look forward to maybe catching up with you again as you expand the use. I think this is a hot topic for ministry and certainly in our schools as well, as educators are trying to figure out exactly the best use for these kinds of tools. And it's coming, so we better be prepared.
Thank you, Martin. Oh, thank you, Sally.
Our pleasure. Have a great day, and blessings on your continued work there in Lodi.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Guy, again, for the time taken to do that. Interesting thoughts, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to consider going the tablet route for day-to-day work, and I think Guy really showed that it is possible, certainly at least in short spurts.
Yeah, I am excited to begin reading his blog, mm-hmm. iPad and Ministry. We actually added it to the Wells Tech sidebar, so you can grab a link from there or in our show notes, obviously. And I love the premise of his blog, that he's justifying the iPad as a ministry tool so that his wife knows he's not just playing games and watching videos.
Exactly, yes.
I'm sure maybe there's a little game playing and video watching going on, too. It's such an awesome tool, and that's what continues to amaze me about it, is that its capabilities are kind of limitless, and the idea of just carrying a thin iPad as opposed to a large laptop and all the cords and things that go along with that is really appealing when you're traveling. So,
yep. One of the things that he mentioned in the interview was his use of Dropbox, and that happens to be the subject of your blog post in our Wells Hacker series this week.
It certainly is, Martin. Thanks for the lead-in. Dropbox is a cloud-based file storage solution. And if you go to Dropbox.com, they're happy to award you with 2 gig of free storage to use to your heart's content. You can put photos and all types of files there, and you can easily share them with other people as well. So a wonderful solution just to use on the internet and be able to access your files from anywhere that you have an internet connection. But my blog post actually focuses on two options with Dropbox that kind of take it to another level. And again, the possibilities are kind of mind-boggling, actually. Once you begin to use it, then you think, oh, and I could use it for this and for this and for this. I actually had an email recently from Don Henning, who's the webmaster at Zumbrota, Minnesota. And Don was looking for a way to gather photos from congregation members to put on their website, just an easy way for people to share photos with her via the web, so they didn't have to email her photos one at a time or something like that. And there's a Dropbox extension, it's called Drop It To Me, that works with your Dropbox and allows just this kind of thing. It allows people to upload files directly to your Dropbox. And so I went over and did some testing with it, signed up for a test account. And when you do that, when you get an account with Drop It To Me, you actually get your own URL. Mine is dropittome.com/WellsTechTrainer. And I can give people that URL, and they can go to that site, and it will prompt them for a password. So it's not just a free reign on my Dropbox. You have to know my personal password that I set up for Drop It To Me, and I would share that with you. And then you would be able to upload files, and immediately I would get an email that notifies me that a new file's been uploaded. And then I could see those files and download them or make use of them however I needed to.
And you don't even need to download them, because they are synced to your Dropbox, right?
That's right. One of the features of Dropbox is a local sync folder on your computer. So magically, anything in your Dropbox automatically comes down to your computer if you have it set up to do that syncing. Mm-hmm. You can obviously turn that off if you don't want to do that, but very powerful feature of Dropbox. And so
it's like they're uploading it right to your computer. Very nice.
Yeah, very nice. And, you know, one drawback that I saw with Drop It To Me is that you have to upload files one at a time.
Right.
But theoretically, if people are in the know, then they can easily zip those files together in one zip folder and upload multiple files with one fell swoop by uploading a zip folder. So a very powerful tool, just really unlocking more and more capabilities with your Dropbox. But my blog post doesn't stop there. We're talking iPads definitely this week. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the whole mobile aspect of having the Dropbox, and the fact that there's apps not just for iPad, but for Android and BlackBerry, and obviously for the iPhone or iPod Touch as well. So that same Dropbox that you can access online from any internet connection on any computer platform, and that syncs with your local computer via your sync folder, that same Dropbox can be accessed from your mobile device. And for me on the iPad, It really just, it's almost like being broken out of jail. It's just a huge breath of fresh air to be able to easily share files via my iPad. So before Dropbox, I needed to email individual photos to myself or use the iTunes photo sync folder. So, you know, physically connect my iPad to my local computer and do a sync and, you know, manage all that through a sync folder, which can get a little bit hairy at times. But now with Dropbox, I can easily put my photos directly, upload them to my Dropbox from my iPad, and I can select multiple folders at once and have it do the file uploads. And then once they're in my Dropbox, like you said, they locally sync to my computer. Mm-hmm. So it's just like moving those folders to my computer, and it's super quick and easy. And just a wonderful way to make the iPad a lot more versatile. Yep. I know Pastor Marquardt even mentioned in the interview that we did with him that he used Dropbox kind of in a similar way with files and things as he was doing his work at Summer Quarters.
Yeah, that was kind of his workaround to get things to print because he had to go to a local computer there on the network, hooked up to the printers there on the network. And he used Dropbox to get his files off of his iPad onto those servers. So that works well. I think the neat, one of the good things about Dropbox, since it is so popular, a lot of the app makers that make iOS apps kind of build that in as its kind of file manager, so to speak, because the app has to recognize that Dropbox is installed in order to use it. But many of them do. A lot of the photo apps, a lot of the word processing and presentation apps, they all do that because really, the iOS does not have a file system per se that you can get. So you really need something like Dropbox to serve that purpose. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised somebody hasn't snatched them up or kind of done something similar, but it's great to have that flexibility.
It is. So, yeah, check out Dropbox if you don't have an account.
2 gigabytes free, I think, right?
Yeah, give it a try. And you can pay for more storage. I think for $10 a month, you can get up to 50 gig or $20 a month up to 100 gigs. So you can use it for backups and all kinds of things.
Yeah, and very reliable. So, all right. Well, my blog post is about a hardware product. In fact, it is a iPad competitor. And I thought that to have kind of a balanced show here rather than just all about iPad, I would look at and review. It's not necessarily a step-by-step anything, but just a review of one of the Android-based tablets that are coming on the market. They're newer. Obviously, the iPad was. I wouldn't say the iPad was the first tablet because tablets have been around a long time, but the iPad really made them a little bit more user-friendly and ubiquitous. So now other tablet makers have kind of seen the light, and Google, through its Android open source operating system, has made some of these tablets more of a kind of in the game, I guess. And the one that I reviewed is from Asus, called the E-Pad Transformer. And it runs the Honeycomb operating system, which is the tablet-optimized operating system of Android. And you can read the review at martinspriggs.com. But a couple of the highlights and a couple of the things that make this Android tablet, or many of them, maybe appealing to somebody who's considering a tablet and maybe a competitor to the iPad is, one, its price. It's cheaper. You can get an E-Pad for just an equivalent of kind of the feature set of an iPad, the lower-end iPad, for about $100 cheaper. So if that's a consideration, if budget's a consideration, that would play into it. And then the other thing is flexibility. Since the Android tablet is open source, it allows a lot more flexibility as far as what a manufacturer can do to the operating system, what you can do to configure it. For one example is you can have widgets, which take up more than just one of those little tiles or chiclets that you have available to you on an iPad or an iPhone. You can have widgets that take up the entire screen or half the screen or quarter or two two tiles worth, and that's handy for different things like displaying calendars right on the desktop, or your latest emails or RSS feeds. Those kinds of things come in real handy. So it's really flexible in that fashion. I would say that the Android operating system in general is not quite as polished as the iPad. It's more immature, so there's some rough edges in a few places, so you have to be aware of that. But this particular tablet is interesting, and it's like I mentioned, it was called the ePad Transformer. The reason they've added that Transformer tag on there is that you can get an optional keyboard that will connect to the tablet. So you slip the tablet into a slot at the top of the keyboard, and essentially it becomes a netbook. And you can close it in kind of clamshell fashion, and it looks exactly like a netbook. And you can use a regular netbook-sized keyboard. It's not full-size, but it's not too bad. In fact, I typed my blog post right on it. And you have a little touchpad on there where you can actually move the mouse around, essentially, like you would your finger, although you can still use your finger on the tablet screen as well. So you've got the best of both worlds there. And in addition to that, the optional keyboard has a battery in it as well. So when you attach it, you more than double the battery life of the unit itself. So you can get up to, I think, about 15 hours in my testing. The tablet itself is about 7 hours, 7-8 hours, something like that, which is a little bit less than the iPad. A guy in the interview said that he'd get about 10 hours on the iPad, so this is a little bit less. But other than that, I think screen size is good, resolution is good. I think the quality of the tablet is good. So it's a worthy competitor. And what's more, we're running a special on ShopWells. Actually, by the time you hear this, it might be over, but we might have some yet that could be available. So make sure you check out the site, shopwells.net. We were running a special for $395, something like that, for the tablet itself. So that is my review on the iPad competitor.
Very
has
nice.
Has Dropbox, you know, so.
All right. Very good. A couple of questions for you. You talked about dimensions, and in your blog post, you even talk about that it's the 16:9, mm-hmm. that widescreen format works really well in landscape mode.
Right.
What about the weight in comparison to the iPad and the thickness?
I don't have the iPad 2, and I know that's lighter, but it's about the same weight as the original iPad. So okay. It's probably going to be a smidge heavier. It's about the same thickness as my original iPad as well. So it's probably a little bit thicker than the iPad 2 then as well, because I think that's a little skinnier. So.
And do you have the option to have a camera on this device? Or
there's a front-facing and a rear-facing camera. So you've got all of that.
Video camera as well.
Yep, takes video. Takes pretty good video. In fact, it takes better video than it does images.
Same as the iPad 2, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's basically feature for feature. It does everything the iPad does. And there's just I mentioned a couple other things in the blog post about apps that are made specifically for an Android phone that don't scale real well, although I think that's being addressed in the latest release of Honeycomb 3.2, I believe it is, which I don't have yet.
Okay.
So, in general, my experience has been very positive with it, and I really like the ability to add that keyboard, because I do not type well on those virtual keyboards. I type a lot better on something that I can feel. And I think the sweet spot maybe for this particular device is in the educational space, especially in the classroom,
sure.
where students, you get that tablet feel, which is good for some things. But there are other times where you want students to be able to type stuff on a real keyboard, and you can attach that, and I think they could do well on this.
And of course, with the Honeycomb operating system, all the flash-based stuff
works
well on here.
Yep, it does. It is a battery drain, but I'm frustrated with that on the iPad too. Is the lack of flash? There's no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
No good way around it.
Very good. It's nice to have options.
Yep, for sure.
All right.
Okay, shall we move on to community feedback?
I think it's time. And first up, we heard again from Clint Rogus, who's a pastor out at St. Paul in South Haven, Michigan. And this time Clint wrote asking about dictation software, voice recognition software. He had found a good deal on Dragon Dictation at buy.com and was interested if we made use of it, Martin, whether it was something worthy. And I think you reminded me before the show started that Gail Potratz had used this as one of her picks of the week at some point in our recent Wells Tech history. So I know I use Dragon Dictation on my iPad and iPod Touch as a voice recognition software on there, and I can just talk right into it and it will convert it to text for me, and I can easily email it or save it as a text document, whatever my needs may be. My husband is a voice recognition guy for his sermon writing. He typically likes to speak his sermon from the notes that he's made as he's done his study during the week, and then he gets into more of the text editing of the dictated sermon, you know, and refining of
So he builds an outline, basically,
a mind map.
Or notes, yep, and then preaches it off of that, and then essentially writes his sermon with the help of Dragon, who basically dictates it into text, and then he edits that. Interesting.
There's a lot of edit on that. You know, obviously, there's a lot of refining.
Very cool. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But you get the basis, the basics down there. So that's great. So, I didn't realize he did that.
Yeah, so I think voice recognition definitely has a place in a church office or for a pastor's arsenal of tools. So I recommend it, Clint.
Nice.
Yeah. Next up, there was some conversation on our Wells Tech listserv. If you aren't familiar with the Wells Tech listserv, you can find links to it in our show notes this week. It's basically an email group where people can communicate among the various Wells Techers out there. I think we have maybe 600 or 700 people subscribed to it. So you get a wide audience for your questions on techie issues related to ministry. And this particular question came in from Dan Scheffel, who's a staff minister at St. Paul's in Onalaska, Wisconsin. I think we've had Dan on the show before.
Yep.
And
we saw Dan. Didn't we see him at the
staff minister conference
in New
Orleans?
There
you go. So he has actually run into a dilemma because of the prevalence of cell phones these days, and more members of his congregation are dropping their landlines completely and going to cell phones only. And the challenge is keeping the church office records up to date so that you have accurate information and contact information for your members. And Dan was wondering if anyone was aware of a cell phone number clearinghouse kind of thing, of 411 for cell phone numbers, because typically they aren't listed in the phone directories and things of our past days, and it's harder to keep up with or look up or research those phone numbers. And so far we haven't gotten any response from our list servers with the specific solution that Dan was looking for, but John Ho did write in and suggest that it might be a good opportunity to make up some kind of an outreach tool where you give people a form or a magnet or something that says, if you're changing your phone number, remember to update, and has a list of people to update and put the church and the church logo at the top of the list. So that's getting creative with the challenges that Dan was describing.
Yeah,
so
phone books are becoming less and less relevant and less useful. When I get mine, I throw it away. I mean, I get a bunch of them, but they don't provide as much usefulness to me as the web does. And plus, a lot of people that I know that I look up in the phone book, I either already know I have them in a contact list, or their number's not going to be in there anyway because they don't have a landline anymore. So and the cell phone's not going to be in there. So interesting dilemma.
Interesting challenge. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Just go right on to the next one, Sally.
Right on to the next one.
Howie Kamholtz.
Next up, we heard from Howie Kamholtz, who's at Faith in Antioch, Illinois. And he was looking, actually writing to us, wondering if the Wells Tech community had ever done any sharing of social media policies. At Faith, they were looking at developing and implementing a policy around their use of social media. And I thought that was an interesting question, Martin. We have talked before about different technology communication plans. We have a page on our WellsTech Wiki dedicated to those, and all of our listeners are welcome to share if they have those kind of plans in place. It would be wonderful to have a good collection of those.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And, you know, enhance that WellsTech Wiki page. I pointed Howie to the InternetEvangelismDay.com resources because oftentimes they have articles yep. related to social media and ministry and, you know, pros and cons and how-tos and all kinds of articles around that topic. I'm not sure if they've specifically addressed policies, but certainly things to be aware of as you build a social mm-hmm. media presence.
A quick search on the internet, I think, yields a lot of mostly business-related ones because businesses have to be concerned about social media and how their employees use it and how they represent their company. But you're going to find a lot of churches now have that with quick Google searches as well.
Sure. So one interesting side note that came out of our conversation with Howie is I visited the Faith Antioch website. It's really a nice website. Mm-hmm. They've done a great job with it. And one of the things I noticed is that they have their own local radio stations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that we can get someone from Faith to join us in the future for an interview and tell us about their radio outreach ministry. Yep. It sounds real exciting.
Yep, they've had that for many years, so it'd be interesting to see what kind of results they see from that.
Mm-hmm. Next up, a quick email from Ted Johnston, who wrote to say it would be nice if our Wells.net University video content was out on iTunes University so that iPad users or whoever, iOS users, could watch the videos through iTunes University.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea, Ted. We'll have to put it on our future someday list, and as we develop new video series and things for Wells.net University, we'll definitely take that into consideration.
Yeah, I like that. It's obviously somebody's got to do that, and that somebody is you, Sally. But
yeah,
I like the idea.
Nice.
Great idea, Ted.
All right. And finally, a few links from our DIGO group. First up, we heard from Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And he pointed us to the PBS page of Learning Media, which is kind of a directory page where they've organized their 6,492 different media resources. And they're organized by grade level, by subject area, and by media type. And so you can get access to all kinds of audio, documents, images, and over 4,000 videos from the PBS archives in all different subject areas. So as a teacher, you probably want to bookmark this page and make use of these free internet resources.
Yep. Very good.
And then finally, we heard from this guy named Martin.
Yeah, and I used our good friend Digo to share a link. And if you are interested in joining our Digo group, it's easy enough. Just go to Digo and then join the WellsTech group. And then you can add to our Digo group and suggest articles to us like I did. This one's called, it's from Church Mag. What's their URL now? ChurchM.ag, I guess mm-hmm. they're using. Technology, Teens, and the Church. And it's more an article about the mobile Bibles that are available and at our disposal now, speaking specifically of iPads and iPhones. And this is about a youth minister who regularly makes use of that even for, you know, in leadership type responsibilities where he's leading a Bible class or whatever, and he pulls out his phone and is reading scripture right from there. And he references one of the apps that we've talked a lot about on this show, YouVersion, as one of the tools that he uses all the time, not just because it can display the Bible, but you can also take notes. You can do some social sharing through social networks. You have different translations of the Bible, bookmarking, et cetera, just a good mobile app. And the article does a nice job at kind of positioning where this is maybe headed and makes the case that, you know, some that say, well, boy, we shouldn't be so quick to jump on the electronic Bible bandwagon. What about the good old, you know, it almost seems sacrilegious to move away from the paper Bible, you know, and the thin pages and the gold leaf and whatever. And then he makes the point in the article that, well, at one point in time, paper Bibles were a new technology as well. We went from we went from verbal tradition to scrolls, then ultimately to printed pages that turned, and so on and so forth. So I think it's a natural evolution, and I, for one, really appreciate the ability to have that Bible wherever I go. You know, it's on my phone, and I can do searches, and I can when we do our daily Bible reading, I'm often on my iPad, and the ability to use daily reading programs that are built right in, very, very handy. So good blog post.
And a good way to let their light shine, especially if you've got your teens engaged in this. Yep. They can easily post it to Facebook, Twitter, an important verse maybe that stuck with them for the Bible study or whatever.
So, yep.
Yep. Nice yep. integration.
All right. Well, that should about do it for the show, Sally. We will be back next week with another edition of our Wells Hacker series. Just a reminder that you can follow our blogs at sallydraper.com or martinspriggs.com, or you can always find our stuff at our show notes website, wellstech.wells.net. Let's close the show with the music of Kevin Lersch, Children of the Heavenly Father, Jesus Loves Me. I thought we'd kind of take the VBS theme. Those are kind of traditional kid-friendly songs, so let's close the show with that music from Kevin Lersch. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Nestling bird or star.